how you first came into contact, it's on now, how you first came into contact with the Pellick Lances.
So I wanted an advertisement to appear in the Telegraph for a companion housekeeper with a certain doctor. And I went there, and there was a Mrs. Mamie Walters, who was a great friend of the Pellick Lances. They'd almost brought her up. And she said, well, I know someone who needs someone like you desperately. Will you come along and see them? And I said, well, yes, all right, because I need the job at the time. And she told me to go to Lincoln's Inn. She would make the appointment for me. And as I was going out, she said, oh, it's Lord and Lady Pellick Lances. Well, I was absolutely horrified. I thought, no, I simply cannot work for Lord and Lady. I'm fairly young then.
Mm.
Anyway, she said, now look, I'll make the appointment. I'll get in touch with you. Well, she did that, and I had to go at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon. Well, being a normally punctual person, I got there at 2:55. And I was told then, well, your appointment is 3 o'clock. And I was shown into the lounge.
This was at Lincoln's Inn, wasn't it?
At Lincoln's Inn, yes.
Yes.
Mm. Old Square. And I sat down and waited. 3 o'clock exactly, the door opened, and I saw this rather wizened old man, really, holding on to a rather very attractive old lady. She had the most gorgeous blue eyes, lovely
yes,
blue
I
eyes.
Mrs. Groom Smith,
beautiful blue eyes.
Yes, yes.
And kind of eyes that smiled all the time. Now I got up, and she's having a chair opposite me, an armchair, and she had a deaf aid, was an Amplibox with earphones on, and we sort of discussed everything. They were going to Switzerland on holiday. This was June, and we sort of discussed everything. The house was in the country, near Shear, and could I drive? Yes, I could, in spite of my disability. And we talked about all kinds of things, little things, you know. Not very much about the things they expected of me, but asking me what I liked. Anyway, I said I would think it over, and I would let Mrs. Walters know the next day. Well, apparently, he phoned Mrs. Walters, Fred phoned Mrs. Walters, at 6 o'clock the following morning, and said to him, well, try and persuade her to come. I phoned Mrs. Walters later on during the day, and I said, well, I have to see someone else, but I'll let you know. And I phoned her again the following day and said, yes, I think I will take the job. So I had to wait about 3 weeks before going out to Shear. I was met there by Mrs. Groom Smith. Quite a nice garden, rather a rambly garden, a miniature golf course, because Fred loved his golf.
Yes.
And they had some rather lovely lupins in the garden. So I said, I'm going to pick some lupins and put them in, you know, for when they come back. She said, don't do that. Fred can't bear flowers in the house. He just cannot. Well, I said, I'm sorry, but I don't know anything about that. But I said, I'm going to put lupins in that corner in the hall. I think it's rather lovely. I had to meet them at the station, and drove back to the house, opened the door, and the first thing Emmeline said, oh my dear, those flowers, aren't they lovely? And again, Mrs. Grinsford looked at me, didn't say anything at all. And later on, he said, I don't really like flowers in the house. Well, I said, I'm sorry, but I think, you know, flowers are really lovely. Well, he said, don't ever put them on my desk, because I always knock them over. Well, of course, one learns things like that. I mean, you know, it's so easy to knock things over.
Said with a sense of humour.
So we'd either go out for a drive. She loved going out for a drive.
Yeah.
She loved the countryside.
Did she really?
Yes, yeah. She loved it. They both love people. They really love people.
Mm.
And they understood people.
Mm.
they were always prepared to listen to your problems and troubles and try and help you. They were so human.
Yes, I had the impression, talking to Mrs. Groomsmith, that in a sense their employees, if you can call them that, become part of their family.
Their employees were their friends.
Yes. It's like a sort of, it's not an employer-employee
relationship. It was an absolutely family circle. They didn't have children of their own. She loved children.
Did she?
She loved children. He was not very tolerant with children. You know, sort of, oh, get up and wake up, oh, that kind of thing. I think she'd like to have had children. I think they went through a rather sticky time at one moment when Fred was away so much and Emily was left on her own.
She was alone. This was in Shear, you mean?
Yes, yes. Peace Lake. South Thatcher.
Yes.
You know, he'd go up to town perhaps on Monday, come back on Friday. Always brought her back lots and lots of news, and she liked that. She asked lots of questions, and she was interested in what he did.
Because it was part of the marriage, wasn't it, that they each respect each other's independence, didn't they?
Completely.
I mean, it was a rather unusual marriage, wasn't it, in that way, that...
Yes.
They were separate, yet together somehow.
Yes, yes, completely. I mean, if he wanted to go off to the Isle of Wight, he would just go.
Yes, with his own friends.
Yes,
go off with her.
Yes, yes. And yet, in spite of that, they were close. They were close. He had his pet names for her.
Yes, now, I'm trying to remember. Partsy.
Partsy.
Yes.
Partsy. Yes. And always, on a certain day, and I can't remember the date, when we always had salmon, that was a celebration, but we never found out what it was. They invited so many people to Four Ways, ordinary people, and they were always interested in what they did. You know, I mean, he didn't sort of expound on what he did.
No, I see. They were good listeners.
Emily.
Well. They let people talk. And
yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
And I can remember one thing. I learned a great deal. It served me in great stead, really, over the last few years. Somehow, when I was with them, I didn't appreciate it so much. But afterwards I did, tremendously, you know, to think back now. Yes, I know, Lemon said. And I remember one occasion, we'd had a disagreement, rather nasty little disagreement. I was on my own with her. And I helped her get to bed that night. I didn't talk. You know, I just wouldn't talk.
Yes.
I was hurt, she was hurt. And I just walked away from her bed, and I just said, good night, and started walking out. And she said, come back, darling, I want to talk to you. She was like that. And I went back, and I stood by her bed, still with that look on my face. And she looked up at me with those lovely blue eyes, and just that lovely little twinkle. And she said, never let the sun set on your wrath. It's so important. And it is so true.
Oh, yes.
It is so true. But she was like that. She was...
She could apologize. She could take the initiative in resolving.
Oh, yes.
Even when she was ill. Because, of course, she wasn't... you saw her through a period when she wasn't really well. Didn't you?
Well, I saw... I was alone with her when she had the coronary. And our neighbours... Jimmy Edwards' sister, and Jimmy Edwards was going there that night, and I'd said to Emmeline, well, I'm going across to Margaret's this evening for a little while. I said, that's all right. She was in bed. And I had a funny feeling that night. I got ready to go across the road and I went upstairs to look at her. And I thought, I'm not going. I don't know why. And I kept going in her room because, I mean, you could slam the door, you could drop a tray of glasses. Mm. She wouldn't have heard it. And I went in on one occasion and she said, I've got a nasty pain. I said, where? And she said, there. And I said, well, does your arm hurt? And she said, well, it does a little bit. So I went in my room and I phoned the doctor. And I said, I think she's had a coronary. And the doctor came, two came, Fred gone the other way. And they examined her and they said, yes, it was a coronary. And they said then, they told Fred afterwards that if I hadn't called him, then she wouldn't have lost the night. Mm. But she was a wonderful patient. She was so patient. Mm. You know, I mean, she'd fractured her femur. Mm. About 18 months before, and well, she was bedridden and she had a caliper on. Mm. And getting her in and out of the car was so difficult, but even then, you know, she enjoyed going out. Mm. And even when she had the coronary, when she knew that she couldn't get out of bed, occasionally she got a little bit frustrated. Mm. But she accepted so well. She was absolutely wonderful. Mm. She was a good patient. I used to do the night nursing sometimes, day nursing hours. And I was with her when she died. Fred was there as well, and a great friend of theirs, Kathleen Coxeter. Did Mrs. Goodsmith mention her?
Didn't mention her, no. Come across her.
She was there. And she died very peacefully. I was talking to her at the time. And strangely enough, I was talking very, very softly. And I think it's something that does happen occasionally with people who are very deaf. Their hearing seems to come back when they're dying. Mm. And I knew that Fred had everything prepared, you know, even when she fractured her femur, knew that she mightn't last. Mm. And had the obituary notice written out. He was shocked. He accepted very well after a time.
He was terribly lonely, wasn't he?
He was frankly lonely.
Afterwards.
Frankly, I would say they were both lonely at times. Mm.
Even when they were both alive?
Yes.
Were they really?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Mm. And yet they had so many friends and so many interests and so much to do.
I think that... I don't think that Emmeline ever got over. I didn't afraid it either. The way that they were put out of the suffragette movement.
Oh, no.
By the Pankhursts. Mm. Because, face it, I mean, he financed them, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and they I mean, if you look at the whole history of that suffrage business, they come out of it awfully well, I think, because they, first of all, they had this tremendous organisational power and they had the money and all that. But when they're thrown aside, they don't argue. They don't make any public scenes.
No,
they just
didn't.
Withdraw and refuse to damage the movement that they'd started.
Yeah. Yes, I think they were hurt, but they certainly were not going to damage the movement. They weren't going to damage the movement.
Did they actually ever talk? Either of them ever talked to you about that? I mean, when you say they. You feel they must have never got over that. I mean, did they often mention it at all?
Very seldom. And when they did talk about it, they never spoke about it with bitterness. They spoke about it as though it was the right thing.
Hmm. You mean to
the right thing for the movement?
Yes, yes.
That it did happen. And I know Amy often said to me, she'd wish that I'd lived during those days. Probably I'd have made a good suffragette, I don't know, I wouldn't have tied myself to railings. And I know that when Murray Stopes came to Four Ways on one occasion, she was going out to India. She was going out to India to see if she could do something out there. and wanted Fred to give her letters for introduction. She was an amazing person. So was Grace Rowe. And Sylvia Pankhurst, of course. Having seen the film fairly recently on television, I didn't
know. The shoulder thing, yes.
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
I could imagine Sylvia then.
Mm.
Christopher, of course, was the much harder type.
Mm. They kept in touch with Sylvia, I think, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Later on.
Yes,
I mean,
yes. Sylvia used to come to Four Ways quite frequently.
Did she really? Mm. Yes, that's interesting. Because in a sense, they're all members of the same left-wing sort of causes,
yes.
I suppose, aren't they?
Mm.
What was the post you had, Miss Kempston? I mean, it was housekeeper,
Liz.
Was it really? Sorry, Liz. Was
companion
it?
Housekeeper.
Yes.
Companion housekeeper. Mm. But I was never referred to, this is my companion, this is my housekeeper, this is my friend, this is our adopted daughter. In fact, the other members of the staff said that they'd never known anyone change as Fred did after I went there, that he'd become much more human.
Really? And they really did treat you as though you were almost a daughter?
Oh, fantastic.
Did they really?
Amazing. Fantastic. You know, we were friends.
Mm. So what did you have to do? I mean, what was your timetable, so to speak?
What did I do?
When you first went there, and what were you landed with doing?
Well, Fred always got his own breakfast ready. He didn't bring tea, he didn't bring coffee. He had barley. He used to make that up himself.
Getting up early?
Very early, about 6 o'clock. I used to get up about 7. Give Emily her breakfast in bed, help her bath, dress, talking all the time, if I could make her understand. Then we'd go out in the garden, sit out in the garden, or perhaps go out for a drive.
You doing the driving?
Driving, yes.
Mm.
We went over to Ireland on holiday, hired a car over there. She loved that, she enjoyed that one. Really enjoyed Ireland. That was soon after the war, you know, when they had everything in Ireland.
Mm. Yes.
I remember one occasion, Labour government were in, of course, and Fred was saying, now, you see, my dear, how good it is for this Labour government. I mean, look at the things we have. I said, well, that isn't true. You know, I said, because you're Lord Pethick-Lawrence. I said, I can go down to stores and get a little extra this and extra that. Well, you know, he said, no, you can't do that, it isn't possible. I said, all right, you go on your rations. And I just put little bits of butter on their plates. I said, that's got to last you now for the whole week. He accepted it.
Mm.
He accepted it.
Yes. But did you actually find yourself involved in arguments then with them about politics? I mean, did they try and influence you out of your conservative views, or did it become a joke, in a sense, or sort of not a joke?
No, because, you see, Mrs. Grimsmith was conservative.
I know, she was, yes.
I was conservative.
Mm.
Esther was.
Yes, she became so.
Yes,
anyway, didn't
Esther became so.
Yes. So how did you manage then? And did you just steer off politics altogether?
No.
Or did they actually, were they interested?
And Emily wouldn't talk about politics.
Mm.
No, she'd say, well, you know, just let them get on with it.
Mm.
But Fred would.
Mm.
I mean, sort of Fred would tell us all the wonderful things the Labour government was doing, and the things the Conservatives said, well, I mean, you get it now, don't you?
Mm.
But I think he knew that he wouldn't sway us. I mean, he didn't try to.
Mm.
I mean, he listened to us.
Mm. And you could have a discussion with him without feeling that you were either going to provoke him or that he's going to try and convert you in any sense. I mean, it was just a free exchange of views.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
Mm.
He was always prepared to listen to your point of view. Mm. The one great thing that he and I did have an argument about, and it was quite a nasty one, I know I went out in a huff, was the death penalty.
Oh, yes.
Because he rarely, well, he wasn't instrumental in the abolishing of the death penalty, but I think he did have quite a say in it. I know one evening I said, well, look, we've got a very long drive. There's a copse. I don't always have a car on my day off. Supposing I come back on the last bus and start walking up the drive at 11:45. And very often he used to come to my room in the morning with a glass of hot water, because I like my hot water in the morning, so he'd sort of bang on my door and say, there you are, my dear, there's your hot water. He was very much like a father to me, really. He really was. And I said, what would happen if you went in my room, and I wasn't there, and somebody found my body in the copse? Well, he said, what difference would that make if we killed someone, hanged someone for killing you? It wouldn't bring you back. I mean, he was so much against it, so very much against it.
I think Mrs. Groom-Smith said that when he was Secretary of State for India, one of the great pains of that was...
The petition.
Yes.
The petition. That really very nearly broke him completely.
Yes, you confirmed that.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Just the agony of going against your own principles.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes.
That very nearly broke him completely.
Yes.
Well, I think it was after that he became a very old man.
It really got inside him, sort of thing. Yes, that's interesting.
Yes.
What were the dates, actually, Liz? I mean, did you go there during the Second World War, then, to work?
No,
there?
I was here on the occupation. I was in Jersey on the occupation. I came back from India in 1940, just before the islands were occupied. I went there 1945.
I see. So you were really there throughout that India period?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, he just resigned then.
I see.
Because he was with the Stafford Cripps.
Yes.
And we used to have talks about the colour problem, which of course none of us is now. Now, I remember Emmy saying one day, how can we talk about the coloured people if we only look at ourselves? Yeah, with our rouge and goodness knows what lipstick. She used to put lipstick on, she'd just get hold of her lipstick and not even a looking glass, just sort of do like that. She was utterly fantastic.
She wasn't a very practical person, was she, really? I mean, of course.
No.
I mean, she just had to be looked after almost like a child.
All the time.
And not just because she's old or ill, but
no. But
because that was her personality.
Yes. She had been all her life. Yes.
So you had to do that for her, did you?
Yes.
But we only got part of the way through the day. I mean, we got Fred up and he'd had his breakfast and she'd had hers and she'd had her bath.
Yes, that's right.
But she got up quite late, didn't she, in fact?
Oh,
day,
yes.
Normally.
Yes, sometimes it was 10, sometimes 11 o'clock. And then... most times we lunched in. Occasionally on Sunday we went out for lunch. We normally had the main meal in the middle of the day, and in the evening something light. Fred adored his food. He loved his food.
Yes, sir.
He didn't eat it. He just sort of got it like that and said, got it. He loved it.
He didn't sort of savour it. He just sort of got through it quickly.
Got it. In the afternoon, after lunch, she had a rest about 3:45, 4 o'clock, and come downstairs. In the winter, of course, we had a very nice lounge, a gorgeous fireplace with burnt logs and peat.
This is all at Peasley?
At Peasley,
yes.
Burnt logs and peat. And we used to play cards together. They both played bridge. He was a good player. He's got the mathematician mind. He was a brilliant mathematician.
Oh, yes, brilliant. Yes. Did you actually feel that in dealing with him? I mean, did he, was he very sharp in arguments and so on? Or
no.
But you just knew that he was.
Yes, I knew that he was.
Yes.
I knew that he was. But he didn't... He didn't sort of push that over, you know,
as I something. See. Mm.
He tried to teach me geometry, because that was one of my failures
when I was in college. Yes.
And I didn't understand it. I don't understand it. I never will understand it. And he tried so hard. And I said, look, we've got to give up.
Why did he try? I mean, how did it happen?
Well, because I think that we were talking... I was talking about my school days. And I happened to say that I couldn't do geometry. In fact, my headmistress wrote to my father and said, it's absolutely pointless trying to teach her geometry because she will never understand it. And he told me how simple it was. And he said, all right, you know, I will explain it to you. And he just sat in a chair and he talked and he talked and he talked. And when he'd finished, I said, well, I'm sorry, I have not understood a single word. Mm. I just don't understand it.
So then what?
He gave up.
Because you see,
he gave up because he knew jolly well that well, obviously I was not going to understand.
Yes, because Mrs. Groomsmith, I think, thought that he would have made a very good teacher, that he was very loose
patient.
At explaining things. Yes, yes.
When he was explaining things, he was so patient.
Yes, yes.
And I speak fluent French, and he could speak French, not very well, much of an accent. And he decided that we'd start talking French. So we speak French. And I would help him with the French. And he got a couple of French books and I had to explain things to him. But he was really keen.
Mm.
He was so keen. He would have made a good teacher.
Because he wasn't very good at languages, was he? I think, again, I'm quoting Mr. Groomsmith, she was very quick. For instance, in
Emily.
Learning Hindustani,
yes.
Apparently.
Yes, yes.
Whereas he couldn't be bothered, or it was all, he didn't have that flair for it.
Oh, well, you're talking about two completely different minds.
Mm.
Completely different minds. I mean, yeah, well, obviously, some people can pick up languages easily, others can't.
Mm.
Emmy wasn't good, but she wasn't a mathematician, far from it. Very far from it, you know.
Romantic sort of person,
exactly.
Which
exactly.
not precise sort of methodical.
Far from it.
Yes.
Far
mm.
from it.
Mm.
I remember going up the stairs one day. She was in bed. And I heard, oh, go away, you silly little thing. Oh, do go away. I thought, what is that? I mean, she had her cat on her bed from time to time, I knew. I knew the cat was in the garden. And I opened the door, there was a tiny little mouse on her bed. And she would just sort of put, oh, go away, you silly little thing. Don't just go away. You know, that was Emmy.
Just not sort of really practical at all.
Not in the least bit.
Yes. But, so you've got her to the late afternoon, she's playing cards with you or whatever. Then she'd have dinner with you, would she?
No, she'd probably have a, in the lounge. I said, Anna, what would you like? She's very difficult with her food. You know, I mean, you could prepare a jolly good meal. And she suddenly decided she wouldn't want it. And having had a good lunch, I said, now, what would you like this evening? Would you like an omelette? Would you like a sandwich? Oh, I think I'll just have a cup of milk. And I said, well, you know, that's not really enough. You just have a little more than that. Oh, well, perhaps you'd have an egg. And then about, oh, sometimes, 6:30, I think I'll go to bed.
Well, before she'd had her egg, you mean?
Yes. So you take her up there, take her to bed, wash her teeth. And she had these false teeth, she had to put stuff in, you know, sort of keep them in. Always had to be careful you had some of that in your handbag too whenever you went out anywhere. Could suddenly sort of take them out and say, I haven't got my teeth. She didn't mind. She used to read a lot. She had her radio We had a special thing put on her radio so that she could have it on as loud as she liked, and she had earphones on. She loved music.
Did she?
Yes. Good music. And she'd read her book. She had her bell, of course. She would always ring if she wanted to call us. And she normally settled down by about 10 o'clock.
So she really has quite a large proportion of her day in bed, really, doesn't she? Because she's there till, say, about 10 in the morning. And she has her afternoon rest. And goes to bed quite early. Well, of course, she's older then.
She was older than Fred.
Yes, she was. Yes. So, in fact, she has a rather leisured life, in a way, doesn't she? By comparison with you. Does that make her easygoing to be with? I mean, when she's well. I mean, obviously, when people are ill, they're different. But was she a relaxing person to be with?
No, not really. Not as far as I was concerned.
Because she keeps changing her mind.
Yes. I think that with Bobby, Mrs. Grimsmith, she was more relaxed with her than what she was with me. I've never really been very, very good at small talk. I mean, you know, Bobby could have... Well, I mean, even sort of seeing that, you know, she could have gone to Emmeline perhaps tomorrow and said, I was at St. Bernard's yesterday.
Yes.
And she could have described the whole of that.
Mm.
Somehow I could never do that very well.
Mm.
When they came over here, they stayed with my family for one night because we couldn't get the hotel that night. Fred didn't drink. Occasionally he'd have a glass of wine. Emmy occasionally would like a little gin and tonic or gin and martini. Very occasionally. She enjoyed it. But he didn't. And, you know, I said to him one day, I said, when I lived in France, I said, we always had wine. And I said, when I came back here, I said, my family, I said, we always had wine. I said, if we've got guests coming in for dinner, I said, you must have something in. So he decided he'd stock up for some wine. So occasionally in the evening, I said to Amy, I said, look, would you like a drop of hot wine with sugar and a slice of lemon? I said, I used to have it like that in France. And she liked that. She enjoyed that. He didn't really approve. And I remember when I first went there, to cook on, we had a very, very old oil stove and an electric cooker. But the electric cooker must not be used. We must use the oil stove. But I'd never been used to using an oil stove. And I kept on and on and on saying, why didn't you get an auger? You'd find it so much easier. He wasn't going to get an auger. And I went on and on and on. It's so ridiculous trying to cook a meal on an oil stove. You can't have a decent meal. Stove. You know, it's sort of great big chimneys and just have the oven on top. And I went on and on about this auger. And one day he said to me, oh, I'm fed up with this. You'll have your bloody auger. And he didn't swear. He wasn't a man who swore. But those were his words. You'll have your bloody auger. So we had the auger put in. And after that, he couldn't praise it enough. He was telling everyone, you must have an auger, you must have an auger. And we used to play golf together. Sometimes, before Emmeline fractured her femur, she'd go...
Oh, you and Emmeline used to play golf, you mean?
No, Fred and I.
I see, yes.
Before she fractured her femur, she'd have a round of golf with him, because he used to walk around very, very slowly. You know. But she enjoyed it. But he was dead keen. He was a great sportsman.
Really. He was very good at billiards as well.
Very good at billiards and snooker.
Yes.
And I remember going in one evening to watch them play billiards. He played billiards with an old crony from around the corner. And I thought, I'd take my knitting in. So I took my knitting and he came over to me and he said, I don't want you doing that, because you'll distract me. So I had to put my knitting down and watch. And he loved it. He loved an audience when he was playing. And he played much better when he had an audience.
Were you expected to sort of applaud or say things in praise, or just to be looking was good enough?
Just looking.
Mm.
Not talk.
Mm.
But afterwards, afterwards, you know, I sort of try and remember a few of the shots, because he taught me to play snooker.
I see, yeah.
And, you know, afterwards I'd say, well, you know, that was a very, very good shot on the blue, wasn't it? And he'd remember it.
Yeah.
And he loved Wagner.
Did he really?
Well, he had the promenade concert on.
Yeah.
Any Wagner night.
Yeah.
Well, when he was at home, of course, we had a good meal in the evening.
Mm.
He had a good lunch.
Which you cooked, did you?
Yes.
Yes, I see. Because Emmy couldn't cook, could she?
Oh, good heavens, no. No, she couldn't boil an egg.
No.
I don't even think she ever made a cup of tea whilst I was there.
Mm.
I'm sure she didn't.
Mm. So anyway, you cooked the meal, and then they used to listen to music, did they?
Yes. Mm. Yes. He loved his Wagner. She wasn't very keen on Wagner. She liked Beethoven very much.
Mm.
Beethoven, she would like. The Wagner nights, and he would just sit there. He'd got into habit, his head used to nod up and down like that. And he'd just sit there. He couldn't sing in tune. Suddenly he'd sort of go, da, da. But he absolutely loved it. He enjoyed it.
Did he really? Yes. I didn't realise he had that sensibility, actually,
yes,
at all.
Yes.
Did you have to do anything for him apart from cook meals, which they ate jointly? You didn't do any secretarial work for him, I suppose, because...
No, I didn't. Esther did that.
Mm.
And when Esther wasn't there, Mrs. Grimsmith did it. Occasionally, I used to type a few letters for Emmy. Not very often, because I couldn't do shorthand anyway, and Gladys did. When he was sick, he had mumps, and he was bad, because he was quite old when he had mumps.
It's quite dangerous when you're an adult, isn't it?
Very dangerous.
Yes.
He had a tiny bedroom, because the house was small. He was a remarkable patient. You know, sort of give him a lot of books and papers to look at. And he was quite happy. I sterilized everything that came out of his room. And he knew that. I mean, putting in a blessed plastic spoon once in the sterilizer. Apart from that, with Fred, I played golf with him. We played bridge. I went to the House of Lords with him. That was most interesting. Emmy's birthday and mine were on the same day, 21st of October.
Mm.
And when she found that out, of course, she was having a party that first year, one in London and one at Four Ways. And, you know, she said, this is our birthday. You know, I was brought in straight away.
Mm.
But they did that with all the staff.
Yeah.
They had a German woman working for them. She used to come in daily. And even with her, with the gardener, with the gardener's boy, they were all just the family.
Yes.
Everyone was brought in.
Yes. And it wouldn't be, presumably, instructions given. They wouldn't say do this, do that, presumably. Would they say, well, if you've got a moment, could you...
Absolutely.
That sort of attitude, would it be?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I remember we had two ponds and they had to be cleaned out every year. So Fred used to have a marvellous time with an old pump and put some old shorts on, an old shirt, emptying this pool. And someone came to the door one day, wanted to know where a certain place was in Peaceley. Well, I didn't know, because I didn't know very well at the time. And I said, well, I'll go and ask his lordship, he might know. And I went along to ask him, and Fred decided that he would come along. And there was this old figure, you know, absolutely smothered in dirty, muddy water. You know, and you sort of look at someone and say, my God, you know, is it Lord Frederick Lawrence? But, you know, he didn't mind.
Mm.
He didn't mind that.
Mm.
You know, he said that after he was made a peer, he got so very many more concessions from people. You know, it amused him.
Mm.
It amused
him. They weren't.
But they didn't play on their being lonely.
No, not at all. No, in fact, it would be a slight joke, would it, for him? I mean,
yes. Of course it was. Yeah. I remember he. We went to Ireland. He and I went up and kissed the Blarney Stone, and it's a terrible, difficult thing to do. Have you ever done
it? You have to lean over the parapet.
You lean right back.
Yes.
Very, very difficult.
Mm.
And when the man said to him, "Ah, now you might even become a Churchill." He didn't know who Lord Pethick Lawrence was, of course, we didn't say who he was. And of course, that tickled the old man terrifically. That really amused him.
Hadn't Churchill been the one who kissed it before him or something?
Churchill had, yes.
Yes. I mean, can you get through, if you're right?
Oh, yes, you can. Yes.
Yes, I think Mrs. Groom-Smith mentioned that. I mean, clearly he has got a strong sense of humour, Fred, hasn't he? I mean, he's not a colourless person at all, really.
No.
It's just that his speeches don't reveal his personality.
Not in the least bit. His speeches are very dull.
Mm. Mm.
Very, very dull.
And not a very good speaker in terms of intonation.
No, not at all.
Either, was he? I mean,
not at all.
Yes.
Are you he had very bad teeth, anyway.
Did he really?
Mm.
How did that affect things? I mean...
well, I suppose it affected his speech, the way he spoke, but, well, I mean, you know yourself, I mean, you've just said that his speeches were very dull, and yet, he was quite capable of making a brilliant speech.
Mm.
Possibly if he'd put a bit more humour into his speeches.
Well, precisely, you see, I mean, clearly he has got this sort of attractive, almost boyishness about him, doesn't he?
Oh, yes.
Which doesn't really sort of come over in the speeches at all. There's not that vitality
in
the speeches.
No.
But
her speeches were much better.
Oh, I'm sure Emily's. They were. Because she had this marvellous emotional sort of capacity, doesn't she? I mean, they really are quite different in their speaking style, aren't they? They're just the opposite of each other, in a sense.
Yes.
I mean, I've never heard either of them, but I mean, I'm just purely imagining how different they must have been. And she was such a romantic sort of person. And
they were both idealists, of course.
Yes, I'm sure they were. But somehow Fred has this practical quality in addition to...
Well, he had to be.
Yes.
He had to be in a partnership like that.
Yes. But is it right that was he very methodical in his way of living every day? I mean, did he always get up at the same time and always do the same things every day?
Yes. Even going for his walks.
Did he really?
Oh, yes.
At set times?
Yes, oh yes. And he's walking strictly. And when he walked really fast.
Did he really?
Mm. I remember when Emmy died, I wanted to get him out of the house when they took the coffin away. I said, "Well, now, you know, you go for your walk." I said, "Make a nice long walk." I said, "You know, go and see so-and-so. I mean, he just, as he went for his walk, he'd sort of call in and see people. And just sort of stay there. I mean, he knew how long. Time was important. If you said 3 o'clock, it was three. Not a minute before and not a minute after. Time was very important for Fred. And I thought I'd got him off beautifully. And I'd sort of worked out in my mind how long he would be. But somehow he just sort of managed to come back at the wrong moment. You want to go down, don't you?
Yes, let's go.
We can talk afterwards.
Yes, let's talk afterwards.
Stand onions.
Couldn't he really?
No.
What to eat, you mean?
He wouldn't eat an onion, and if we had an onion in the larder, you know, we sort of think, well, she liked onions. And if there was an onion in the larder, Fred had been away for 3 days, and he was coming back, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, any onions about? He always knew if there was an onion. He just could not stand onions. Most extraordinary.
He had sort of dietary fads, did he, really, would you say?
Yes. He wouldn't drink tea, he wouldn't drink coffee. Occasionally, perhaps about twice a year, he'd have a cup of coffee. when one least expected.
Presumably on a fixed date.
Well, you know, one least expected. I mean, you know, I never thought to say, well, would you like a cup of coffee? But on one occasion, I didn't ask him. And he was so cross about it. He said, well, you might at least have asked me if I want a cup of coffee. And I said, well, you know, you never drink coffee. And we really did have quite a nasty little set to. In fact, I had a fall afterwards. I didn't blame him for it.
But
one thing he used to say, he said, I always understand you because you're half French and you're half English. So, you know, in other words, I mean, he didn't say so, but I was a mongrel. He didn't say so, but he did understand the French side of me, and he understood the English side of me, and he always made allowances for both sides. Oh, yes, he did.
Because that's the thing about them. They like, as you say, they adapt to individual people, and they like people's individuality.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because Gladys and I were so different, so very, very different.
Mm.
Very different. And yet, they accepted both of us as we were.
And they treat you differently, would they?
Treat us differently.
And as you say, that leads to problems, I suppose, in a sense, because in a sense it's easier if you treat everybody the same, isn't it? Because then nobody feels that they've got favourite treatment.
Well, for a time, it was considered from Lincoln's Inn that I was getting preferential treatment. And I knew it.
Mm.
I knew it. I did know it.
Mm.
But between us, we resolved that. between the staff.
Yes.
And Esther did admit that soon after I went there, Peel did mellow considerably.
But you were saying that they never addressed you as Miss Kempster.
No, it wasn't Miss Kempster.
It was entirely...
This is my friend Elizabeth.
Yes. And the same with Gladys,
oh,
and the
yes.
same with Esther.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
Mm. I want to ask you about Esther. I've got it switched on now, so do switch off if you don't. What was she like? I mean, she was a very intelligent woman, wasn't she?
Very intelligent, very intellectual person.
Mm.
She rarely kept up with Peel's politics, even though her politics weren't his politics. She rarely kept up with all that. Very well-read girl. As I said before, very deaf and... She really stood up to Peel. Really stood up to him. Much more than, you know, either Gladys or I did. She was definitely his right hand. And he consulted her on so very many things.
When you say stood up, and did he need standing up?
Oh, yes.
How do you mean? I mean...
Oh, well.
Would he drive you around to do anything that he wanted?
He would with her more than with us.
Mm.
More than with Gladys and myself.
Mm.
I think possibly because Esther had been there much longer.
Mm.
And, you know, had perhaps as far as he was concerned, become more or less part of the furniture.
Yes, I see. So she'd say what? Now, just... shut up or something. She presumably wouldn't say that.
No, well, she'd put up with it for a long, long time. It might go on for weeks. And she was quiet little Esther, very quiet little Esther. She spoke very quietly, very precisely. And she might carry on with this for a few weeks. And then suddenly it would just blow. And she would just tell him exactly what she thought of him.
Mm.
That he was a selfish, arrogant old man. You know, just like that. And he would take it.
Yes.
He would take it.
Mm.
And he would apologize to her.
Mm. Mm.
She was the most amazing person.
Mm. Very amazing. She could get away with it and then she'd revert to being... She cooperative and helpful and...
Just quite naturally. It would just sort of go like that, up, and
yes,
back
yes.
on a level keel again.
Mm. Yes, that's very interesting.
And she was very, very helpful with Gladys and myself.
Was she really?
Oh, yes.
What, smoothing things over, you mean, that sort of
thing? Smoothing things over. You know, perhaps sometimes if Emmy had been a little difficult. Emmy was a bit more difficult than Fred, really. I think we could cope with Fred more than we could with Emmy. It was so different.
Because he was predictable, I suppose. That's one way that makes him more more capable with, isn't it? I mean, she's so she goes off to do things unexpectedly all the time, doesn't she?
Oh,
I mean,
yes. It was nothing. You know, perhaps I might be in the kitchen, I might be in the lounge. And the next thing, I'd see Emmy walking down the drive. And I'd sort of go after her, sort of me, sort of, you know, with my limits of getting after her, Emmy with her stick going like that. And I said, where are you going? I'm going into Guildford. I said, well, I'll take you in the car. No, not, I'm going on the bus. Into Guildford. Well, I mean, I was jolly well, she couldn't get on the bus to go into Guildford. I mean, get into Guildford anyway, what'd she do? And she was so deaf, she didn't have her Amplivox with her. So you sort of come back and sort of, as you're coming back, sort of try and smooth things over a wee bit. And then dash in and get a coat and take Emmy off to Guildford.
But by the time you got the car out, I suppose she decided she didn't want to go.
Oh, she'd quite settle down and say, well, you know, we're going to Guildford. Well, where do you want to go? I want to go to the chemist. Well, why do you want to go to the chemist? Well, I've got a prescription I want made up. So, right, we'd do that. And then she'd say, well, let's go for a drive. Let's go and have tea somewhere. You know, just like that. Quite unpredictable.
Yes. So in a way, that's more difficult to manage than Fred's regularity and rigid routine.
Yes.
Yes.
But his regime.
Yes. The how they ever sort of made a marriage, those two, because you could hardly have two utterly different types, could you? I mean, Fred is so regular, precise, so rational, so well organised and all that, and she's so romantic.
Quite the opposite.
So, so absolute opposite, aren't they? Didn't it ever get on, didn't they get on each other's nerves with these opposite qualities, do you think? Or did they somehow, had they learned to live together by the time you were there?
Obviously, as in every marriage, there was always a certain amount of friction, but it didn't last.
I'm sure they had friction over peers and they developed routines for dealing with problems.
Yes, I mean, she understood that he had his set times for doing this and doing that, and I mean, she knew that on Saturday evening somebody came to play snooker and billiards with him. That on Sunday morning he would go off and see certain friends of his. Their friends were not always the same friends. He had his friends, she had her friends.
They overlapped, but they were. Yes.
But, you know, they'd respected. I mean, obviously, if they met these friends out, they behave in a civilized manner. But, I don't know, to me, they were two very fine people.
Because their marriage in itself is a very interesting creation, isn't it? It's an artistic sort of creation, their marriage, isn't it? It's something that as worth creating as any sort of painting or work of art, in a way, isn't it? It's a most strange affair, but it seems to have worked.
I think so. And yet, on the other hand, you can turn this off.
Of course, her sisters. She used to see quite a lot of them.
I should say that she was more fond of her brothers than her sister. Tom in the Isle of Wight and Harold in British Columbia. Yeah, she was very fond of them.
She writes a lot of letters, doesn't she, to relatives and friends?
Yes,
I mean,
relatives and friends.
Yeah.
She used to dictate those to
Gladys. Yes, yes.
Do you think she wrote more letters because she was deaf? Or did she, had she always written them?
No, she always had. She always had written letters.
Yeah.
And she wrote a very good letter.
It sort of flowed, didn't it?
Yes, yes. Oh, yes.
Do you think, I mean, do you think, I don't want to put this wrongly, but do you think the fact that you'd had polio attracted them to employ you? I mean, were they eager to employ you for that reason, partly to help, in a sense? Or is that not right? They certainly took an interest, didn't they, in making things easier for you.
It never occurred to me that that might be the reason.
I'm not saying that's the only reason why they should employ, but I mean, do you think that they were helping you in the same way as they were helping Esther in her way, and presumably Gladys also in hers? They did something for all there.
Well, I got the impression from Mamie Waters that they found it very difficult to employ staff. Because I don't think that it's everybody who could have adapted themselves to their ways. You know, before I actually met them. I don't remember who they had before me. I know they had a series of people. Well, I don't know why they didn't stay, because, I mean, after all, Gladys was there for so many years. Esther was there for many, many years before Gladys.
Because it was partly the war, I suppose, made it difficult to get people and to get us.
Well, I don't know, because I don't know what things were like over there. The war, I went over after the war.
But you said that Fred helped you walk down hills.
Yes. He did, for some reason or other, he took an interest in me. I like blue. And he bought me, they had the first car I drove was a Humber, very old Humber. When I say old, very old model, I know we found it difficult to get spare parts. And he eventually bought an Armstrong Siddeley, Priest Electric Gear one. And he bought me a blue suede jacket and some blue gloves. And Esther and Gladys were horrified. They said, he's never done anything like that before. Why should he do it for you? Yeah, they just couldn't understand it. They just couldn't understand it. I must say, he used to do all kinds of little things for me that he'd never done for any of the other staff. I don't know why.
But he really quite set out to help you about walking and things like that?
Definitely. Oh, yes.
And yet she does...
Because I remember... you see, the muscles have gone there completely. And if you said to me now, all right, what's the premium bond? 25,000, isn't it? All right. If you said to me, right, £25,000, if you lift that foot off the floor, I can't do it.
Can't you really?
No. I can lift that one. But that one I could not lift. I can do that, but that's what happens it afterwards. Yes. Just couldn't do it. And I went to a doctor and he said, oh, well, what about massage? Well, I knew damn well that massage wouldn't be any good. I mean, you know, I've tried so much before that. And I was telling Fred about this. I said, well, the doctor says I should have massage. He said, well, I'll do it for you. You know, I'll help you in that way. I'll do it for you. And he was massaging it up here like that. I'll help you. I'll do it. And he was so keen. He was sort of hoping that I'd be able to lift my foot off the floor. And I was disappointed for him, you know, that I couldn't do it. But he really was, he was so, oh, I don't know, he wanted to help. And I think that if I could have said, look, I can do that, that would have done everything for him, just made everything for him.
But Emmeline doesn't, Emmeline's not understanding like that then?
Oh, no, not in that way. I mean, she...
Understanding other ways, but not that way.
Yeah, not in that way, no. I mean, you know, she'd never say, well, sometimes she'd look at me and say, you look tired. Well, yes, I was tired very many times, so was Gladys. But
she'd have done the tiring.
She wouldn't say, why don't you sit down for a while? Fred would.
Mm.
He'd say, sit down, my dear, we'll have a little talk. I could talk about anything to Fred. I had, when I was out in India, when I got polio, I was engaged. And I knew jolly well that he could never, go through with it. And I wrote to him and said, well, I've got polio, and I give a bit of call for engagement. And he said, well, I'll come and see you. And he came to see me. We met in Pune. And, I think he hired a car. I remember that. And he had to carry me out to the car. And he said, well, I think we ought to get married right away. I said, no, I don't think so. I mean, I knew that he could, he was a man, he was like me, tennis, active. And it's very difficult to sort of have a cripple wife, I suppose. And soon afterwards, of course, I came back. And he married somebody else on the rebound. Wasn't very happy. Well, I say it's on the rebound, I'm flattering myself. And I cared for him for a long, long time. And somehow or other, he always knew where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a phone call one day at the Peter Glorence's of Fourways. And he said, well, I've just come back from Africa, from India to Africa. And he was on research. He was on research with polio, infantile paralysis then.
Mm-hmm.
And I jiggered everything up because, they wrote to me and said, what did I feel? What happened to me? And they had a scrap of paper. And it really hit me, because I hadn't seen him for years, or even heard from him. And I told Pale about it. I said, he wants to meet me. And I told him what happened. And he said, well, my dear, you go. And I met him, and he said, well, I'm glad that you broke it off, because I couldn't have gone through with it. And that hurt me more than anything. And I remember coming back to Fourways that night, and Peel was there waiting up for me. He was waiting up for me. And I just came in, I just burst into tears. And he let me cry it out. And he said, now, my dear, he said, now, do you want to talk? Or would you rather wait until tomorrow? And I thought, no, I've got to pour it out. And I did. And he was so wonderfully understanding. And he helped me get through that little bit. There was that...
So human understanding.
He was a human understanding, but he was sensitive himself. And he was upset because I was upset.
Mm.
And he helped me over that tremendously.
So they're not just do-gooders in the abstract.
Oh, good heavens.
They concern themselves about individuals.
Because
That's really quite rare, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Because a lot of people who are... who are social reformers, they can't really cope with the personal helping people as individuals. It's all got to be sort of...
It's all got to be en masse, yes.
Yes. But they weren't like that.
They
She wasn't like that. One knows she wasn't like that, really, because she's such a sympathetic, sensitive sort of person. But, of course, he, in a sense, the way you're describing it, in a sense, he's even better, in a sense, in that way, than she is.
Well, they were two such different people, Brian.
Yeah.
It's difficult to say. I mean, you say he was a better person in that sense.
They're just good in different ways, somehow.
Yes. I mean, there were so many times I've seen them. I've seen it with Gladys and Amy, because. Gladys broke up. Now, this is strictly entre-nous. We're not switched on, are we? We had our talks. It was usually when Amy was in bed.
She seems to have been usually in bed anyway.
Yes. And then he'd suddenly say, well, I'll just go up and say goodnight to Emmeline. And he'd go upstairs and sit by her bed, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes. Sometimes he got very, very irritated with her. I think her deafness sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's difficult if you're talking to someone who's deaf and they don't understand.
Yes, it is.
And then she'd suddenly say, well, oh, why doesn't he talk clearly? I can understand you. Why can't I understand him? So there's sometimes a little...
Well, especially as he's such a brisk sort of business-like person, I suppose it must be irritating in a way. You know, you can't help yourself being irritated. But he was a very fit man, wasn't he? I mean, he...
Oh, very.
He'd sort of go...
He used to do exercises every morning.
Did he really?
Every morning.
Did he really?
He did his exercises.
What sort of physical jerk?
Oh, yes.
Did he really?
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, yes.
Was he sort of at all vain about his appearance? I mean, did he...
Not in the least
bit.
Not in the least bit.
So it was just really to keep fit, really, to make sure you didn't go to sea.
He didn't mind if he had spots all down his coat. Mm. Not in the least bit. Not a bit. And she didn't mind either.
No, but doesn't she care about her dress then, or about her looks? I mean, you say she put lipstick on.
Yes, she put her lipstick on like that.
Mm. So did you have to sort of groom her in a sense? I mean, sort of
clear
up afterwards and sort of tidy her up and things?
Yes, we'd brush her hair over nicely for her, you know. She had very pretty hair.
Did she?
Very pretty hair.
But you would look after it.
Just to brush it for her, wash it for her. It'd be natural somehow. She had very pretty hair, real silver. Really
Yes. Was she actually a pretty woman, do you think? I mean, she certainly seemed a pretty woman as a young woman in the suffrage movement, but I think Mrs. Groomsmith said she wasn't, or somebody said, she wasn't really a pretty woman, you wouldn't have said, but she was an attractive woman, if you see what I mean. That is, you felt...
Well, when I first met her, I can see her now. I was sitting here, she was sitting over there. Fred was sitting there, and I looked at her, and my first thought was, you must have been a very, very beautiful girl. Terrific personality.
It's the eyes partly, is it, and the hair, and the smile.
Yes, well, that makes up for a great deal, doesn't it?
But she didn't have sort of classic features or anything like that.
No, she didn't. She didn't. No, she didn't have prominent cheekbones or anything like that. Well, of course, when I met her, she was quite old, you know.
Yes, yes.
Her face wee bit wrinkled.
Yes. But what were her tastes in clothes? What sort of things did she wear?
Well, she didn't care what she wore.
Just anything.
We'd say she'd pick something out of the wardrobe. Say, you can't wear that, not today. She'd sort of pick something else, you know. And then she'd take it out and then just sort of throw it down. I mean, it doesn't matter where it landed. If it went on the floor on the chair, it didn't matter. I knitted myself a blue cardigan, and she liked it. And we were going to Ireland, and she said she wanted one like it. So Gladys and I went like mad to knit this blue thing for her. She lived in it ages and ages. She just wore this damn thing. She really liked it. But she certainly didn't have any glamorous clothes.
Mm.
None at all. Nor jewellery.
But not because she didn't believe in having glamorous clothes, just because she couldn't be bothered, is that right?
She couldn't be bothered.
Yes, yes. Was she lazy then, would you say, in a sense?
Yes.
I mean, this getting up late and so on is laziness then, isn't it, really?
Yes.
And that's partly because she's always had people dancing attendance.
She had people dancing attendance on her all her life.
Mm.
And even in the suffragette movement she did, didn't she?
Yes, including Fred, I suppose, in a sense.
Oh, Fred, definitely. Definitely.
And Fred does do a lot for her, does he?
Yes.
Apart from running the money side of things.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes.
I mean, he was quite capable. I mean, if I was out, if I, you know, they were very, very nice about that. You know, so sometimes they will. So-and-so's asked me to make up Fort Bridge. Can I go? Oh, yes, my dear, of course, go. You know, I'll get Emmeline's supper ready. I'll do this for her and I'll do that for her and put her to bed. Mind you, I don't know that he always enjoyed it. I didn't think she did either. Maybe he used a few little words. You know, he'd say, oh, come on, come on, come on, oh, come on, do hurry, do hurry.
Because he was rather like that, wasn't he? He wanted people to get things down quickly, and there was no fuss on. Yeah. And he ate quickly, you say, as well. I imagine she would linger. Well, because they didn't...
Oh, of course she would.
They didn't have meals together much, did they? I mean, in fact...
Well, four ways, yes. Don't forget that they only rarely started being together a lot when I went there.
Mm.
That's when Fred sort of... well, retired from political life.
That's, actually, I wanted to ask about this. I mean, they were living... how were they living when you were working for them? Because were they, didn't he spend the weekdays in London and she stayed
most
up
of the
there?
Week in London.
She stayed in Surrey, didn't she,
yes,
then?
Yes, yes.
And then they'd be together for Saturday and Sunday,
yes,
would they?
Yes.
And that, was that the regime, really, most of the time you were there?
No, not most of the time.
I see.
No, it got to it, then he would be down there much more.
I see.
But it also got to it when she was quite glad when he was going up to town.
Hmm.
You know, when she almost sort of breathed a sigh of relief.
Hmm. Why, because he flustered her, or...?
Yes.
Yes, I see.
Yes.
She liked being free.
Oh,
she?
She liked to be free. I mean, she liked to be free. She didn't like sort of having to be told, now we're going to do this at such and such a time, we're going out at such a time, we've got to be here at such and such a time. She didn't like that. I mean, she just wanted a...
to drift.
She wanted a drift, an easy life.
Yes, I see. Yes. Yes.
But they really were... they really were the most fascinating people.
Was she demanding, really, then? I mean, she was always ringing the bell, was she, and always wanting things, and wanting people to rush up and do things for... I mean, quite apart from her being ill.
She had moments of being demanding, and she'd have other moments when everything was so free and so natural and so easy, when you'd sort of wonder, oh gosh, you know, why did I get thrashed about what happened last week? You know, when she's like this now, you sort of forget what happened a few days before, when you'd have a few days of everything just sort of going like that.
Mm, smoothly.
Really smoothly, and then suddenly, whoops.
Mm.
Up we
she
go.
Had moods, quite marked moods then, didn't she? I mean, she just did fluctuate in temperament, really.
She was never nasty. Not really nasty. Occasionally, she would get a little. And you could sort of go in her room, you know, and sort of see, oh, it's going to be one of those days. Occasionally.
Hmm.
But not very often.
What would that be? A sort of spoilt child?
Oh, definitely a spoilt child.
Hmm.
Definitely a spoilt child. And then she'd, well, she'd just ask and demand, you know, most extraordinary things.
Hmm. And you just have to rush around or else knock some sense into her somehow.
Well, it was just sometimes a case of your will against hers.
Yes.
Sort of thinking, you know, what's going to be the easiest for you and the easiest for her,
yes,
eventually.
Yes, yes.
But I know that after she'd had her coronary, the first coronary, she had one fairly big one, and she had a small one afterwards, and of course she had the bad one. I was giving her an injection one night, and she said to me, If I was an animal, you'd put me to sleep, wouldn't you? And I said, well, I don't think you're really suffering. I said, you are in bed, and you're waited on. We're doing all we can for you. And she said, just give me an overdose.
Did she really? Mm.
And I know when she died, I called the doctor in, and the doctor said, well, you know, given her Coramine injection. I said, no, I haven't. And she was going to be cremated, so we had to have another doctor. And they went through the whole lot, you know. I mean, they knew what drugs we had. We had giving her pethidine and Coramine. And I know the night nurse and myself, both the doctors put us through it, which is so stupid, really, because she was, what, 80?
Yeah.
85, she had.
Yeah.
But she got to the stage after she fractured her femur when things were very difficult for her. I mean, it was difficult enough for her to get about before, but after she fractured her femur, it was very trying for her, and she did go through a lot of pain, a lot of pain. And I must say, she very seldom complained about that pain. She was very good about it. I was in Silly Isles when she had her fall, and they sent me a telegram, and I came back, and I got back to Four Ways, I think it was about 8 o'clock, and Fred told me about it very quickly, and I said, well, she was at the hospital in Haslemere. I said, let's go and see her. Oh, he said, you can't drive all that way tonight. So I said, yes. I said, let's go. And I could start the car. So we got the garage to come down, and they got it going. And I backed out of the garage, and I saw a rose. She loved flowers. She adored flowers. He didn't like flowers about the house, I said before. But she loved flowers. And she was very interested. Gladys did a lot for the garden, a tremendous amount. And when I backed out, I saw this rose, and I got out of the car, and snapped it off, and we drove to Haslemere, and she really was in a bad way. They'd given her a tremendous amount of morphia, and you know what morphia does to some patients, and she really was in a bad way. And I showed her this rose from the garden, and she sort of came round, you could sort of see her coming round. And the sister said afterwards, you know, said, that rose did her the world of good. And it did. And we used to go in every day, sometimes twice a day, Haslemere, to see her. And then, of course, afterwards, she had to have physiotherapy. So that meant taking her in 2 or 3 times a week. And she didn't take to that very kindly. But I think she went through a tremendous amount of suffering.
Mm.
Last years of her life.
Mm.
Last, what, 3 years.
Mm.
And then, of course, when she had the coronary, you know, I mean, she couldn't get out of bed. I mean, she couldn't even walk across the passage there.
Mm.
And that was very dry. I mean, even in spite of the fact that she did like her bed so much.
She didn't want to be in it for that reason.
She didn't want to be in, not for that reason.
No.
And I remember one night, there was a nightingale outside. And it really was terrific. It was a Cambie in Surrey. And I went upstairs to her room, and I put her Amplibox on the window ledge and turned it up, and she heard it, and she was so thrilled. She loved things like that.
Yeah.
She loved things like that. And she could look at a tree, of course Fred could as well, and whether it was winter, spring or summer, she could always see a tremendous amount of beauty in it.
Yeah. She liked going out for drives and looking at the country, didn't
yes.
she as well?
Oh yes,
mm.
yes.
What were her two houses like? I mean, you saw two houses. You saw...
Well, there's Lincoln's Inn.
You saw three then, didn't you? You saw Four Ways and Peaslake.
No, Four Ways.
Four Ways is at Peaslake.
Four Ways, yes. Well, it's between Shear and Peaslake.
I see, yes. What was Four Ways like as a house? I mean, how did they keep it and what was there? I mean, her bedrooms were upstairs.
Well, Four Ways they had built as a sort of little weekend retreat. And of course, eventually, they went to live there. And where the dining room table was, P.L. said, when he planned the house, he planned it. I don't think she had anything to do with it at all. And he said, now, where that table is now, he said, when I saw the ground, I said, that is where the dining room table is going to be. And that's where the dining room table was. She had a balcony. And she had special windows, you know, with that, what do they call that window?
Lattice
window? No. Special window pane.
Oh, not bottle glass, that?
No. Oh, so attractive for the sun.
I don't know.
What do they call it? Special window pane.
Sort of opaque colour, you mean, or...?
Oh, I can't remember. Ask Gladys when you see her. And she had netting, of course, in front of the veranda. She had net doors, you know, the mesh doors, so the incense wouldn't come in.
I see.
But she could sit out on the veranda if she wanted to.
Mm.
And then on the side of the house, they had another great big veranda as well, where she could sit and get all the sun, which she loved. She loved the sun.
Did she?
Yeah. She adored the sun.
And the whole house is oriented around really half being in the garden, is it? Yes. I mean, it's the garden and the house.
Yes, the garden was a very rambling garden. And then, of course, they had a terrific vegetable garden. And Fred always picked the vegetables. He loved picking the vegetables. Especially the asparagus.
Now, how do you explain that? I mean, I think Gladys mentioned this to me. He'd come into the house. It was his prerogative to dig up the vegetables.
Yes.
Why? I mean, what is it? Is it part of this sort of boyish delight in doing things, unfamiliar things? How does that fit in with his personality, really? This digging up for vegetables. And what else, what other things like that did he do?
Picking gooseberries, bottling gooseberries, which I did.
Cooking, of course, I suppose.
Yes.
He liked doing sort of ordinary things now and again, did he? I mean, sort of ordinary day-to-day things.
He always did his own breakfast, always.
Did he?
Yeah. Don't remember what he had for breakfast. I know he had this barley water.
Oh, yes. I think Gladys told me that.
Did he have
He had ever so much barley water, not just a little.
Oh, tremendous amount. Tremendous amount. It was a big, huge...
And toast with jam. Toast and with, he'd help himself to the jam as well.
Yes.
Without having any toast with it.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Part of the time. Yes. I mean, he really was like a schoolboy in a way about his food.
Oh, he was.
Yes,
he was. As I say, he didn't eat it. You know, it's sort of a case of, right, I've got it now. Here it comes, you know.
You also said he was sensitive over dinner when we were talking. I mean, you mean that he could easily be upset by some sort of casual remark that somebody had made that you wouldn't have expected him to be upset by?
Not sensitive to the point of being hurt. I don't mean that kind of sensitivity. Any moving story, or perhaps something to do with Wagner.
Mm. You mean he could easily be moved emotionally?
Oh yes, emotionally.
I see.
Emotionally.
Yes.
So not easily.
Mm. But certain not things easily, would trigger it off.
Things. Oh yes.
Yes, I see.
Yes.
To tears.
Yes. Mm. Well, not sort of right tears,
no.
But, you know, you...
Mm. You could see that he was strongly... Yes. You see, none of this one would know, and unless I'd talked to you or Mrs. Groomsmith, I wouldn't have suspected any of this at all.
Well, I think that so many people have always had the wrong idea about the Patrick Lawrences.
Mm. Mm.
And it doesn't matter who you meet, you're going to get quite different ideas about the world.
Yes, I mean, in a sense,
I mean, you will with Frieda and Nancy.
Mm. And people are different types of people to different people. I mean, in a sense, you know, one's a different type of person in different circumstances, isn't one?
But I think that it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter who worked for them. I think they're better people, having known them.
Mm. Mm. Did you?
I mean, Emmy being an idea. Well, I think that up to a point they're both idealists.
Mm.
Up to a point. Emmy, of course, much more.
I think Gladys said that she actually did feel that she absorbed some of their feminism, in a sense. I mean, she felt she didn't ever become sort of militant or anything like that.
Who?
But Mrs. Groom Smith.
Gladys didn't.
Yes, but that she did absorb some of these attitudes.
Oh, she did.
Did you feel the same? And did you somehow unconsciously absorb their different view of women's position?
Mm. Yes, I did.
Mm. You just sort of unconsciously absorb it from them in a way.
Yes, yes. You couldn't help but.
Mm.
Couldn't help but.
Mm. But you would tell me, I mean, obviously one asks lots of questions.